Coming to you across the ether at the speed of light is the Mortgage Moment with Mark Wells of Preferred Financial and Kerry Deese, our ninja processor fending off those evil underwriters who want to turn your loan down. Join us for the next hour. We're going to take a look at credit scores, how to repair them, how to have better scores, how to prepare yourself for the mortgage process so you get the best rate. Grab a cup of coffee and join us. Well, Kerry, we actually did an early show on this. We made it our second show because we thought this is really one of the most important topics.
Right.
And because we had, I think, two loyal listeners at that time, we thought we might want to repeat that now that, you know, the thousands of hordes have descended upon us and everybody in Greenville is waking up at 7 a.m. to hear our voices. So we want to talk about credit scores. Surely, I would have to say the most important aspect of mortgage underwriting. Everything lives and dies by the credit score. You know, I'm so ancient that when we first went into the business, we did not even know there was such a thing as a credit score. We used to get our credit reports off a teletype machine. We would type in all this information, you know, the borrower's name, social security number, and we would hit a button. And then usually 4 or 5 hours later, on this kind of heat-sensitive paper,
uh-huh,
you know?
That thin stuff
it would
that
curl
up.
Yeah. And we would get this long credit report. It would be about 5 feet long, and it would just roll up into a scroll. And all it had was a credit record. We did not know that underlying the credit system, there was a score going on. And we used to, in the early 90s, we would submit loans. And back then, if you had a collection account on your credit report, you had to pay it off to finish your house loan, I mean, to get approval. So we kept paying off collection accounts, and then the lender would call us and say they were turning the loan down. And we half the time wouldn't know why. We finally found out, well, their scores dropped. Well, what are scores? Well, there's scores that we have, but you don't have them, and we can see them, but you can't see them. And we were always wondering, well, why, when we were doing the right thing, did scores drop, and what were these scores anyway?
It's hard to believe that things were ever less transparent.
I
mean, we think they're not very transparent now. It's hard to believe it was even worse.
It is. It was. And it was hidden even from those of us who were in the business for a long time. So about the mid-90s, Congress got wind of all this stuff and said, look, yeah, your borrower's future is tied up in this so-called score system, and we got to let the consumer know a little bit about it. So they cracked it open a little bit. The way they did that was by, first of all, making the scores available to the borrower, to the consumer, as well as to us. And then they also required them to disclose what four factors had most affected their score. So it took us about a year after that, but after we'd seen another, you know, hundreds of credit reports, we had pretty well seen all the factors. We used to write them down. You know, I found factor number four, it's this. And factor number 10, it's that. We found out, and this was back then, that there were 38 factors. I think there are 41 now. 38 factors that could affect your score, and they were all negative. So we began to understand, okay, so the borrower starts out with a theoretical score. And that varied a little bit from bureau to bureau. And then everything was a deduction. So there really weren't, like, positive factors as such. It was just, how did you minimize your negative factors? So we began to have a bit of an understanding. And since then, I won't say that they've gotten more transparent with it. But I do think we've learned a lot more about the system.
Yeah.
As we've done it. So let's talk about the credit system itself. How many credit bureaus are there, Kerry?
There are three.
And what are the biggie names?
Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion.
That's right. Those are the three credit bureaus that track your credit movements. They each have a credit score model. And, Kerry, what do they call the model for the credit score?
The FICO.
And the reason I mentioned FICO, and it stands for something bizarre like Fair Isaac Incorporated. I don't remember what it was. Fair Isaac Company. And it was a proprietary system that, you know, taking 38, 40 factors would arrive at a score which was to show an indication of how likely it was that the borrower would meet his credit obligations. Now, the reason we say FICO is that in our day and time, many of the consumer tracking systems, things like Credit Karma, for instance, where they offer you the ability to see your credit scores on an ongoing basis. The problem with those systems is if you read the fine print, they are normally providing you what they call a plus, P-L-U-S, or a Vantage score. And these are not FICOs. And in fact, Carrie, we've seen, what, significant spreads.
We had one recently. It was like a 60-point difference. It was something
unreal.
really ridiculous.
And they can be off, and I don't know why they're off that often. They are usually 10 to 20 points different from FICOs, but we do run across occasional ones that are 60, 70-point differences, and I don't know how to explain that. I just say that so that you know that when you are preparing for a mortgage, the best thing is to call us, let us run your real three bureaus, get your real FICO scores, and get your factors, because once we know all of those things, we can help chart your way to healthier scores and better rates. So we do know that each bureau starts with a slightly different score. Equifax starts with an 818, Experian with an 844, I think TransUnion's is an 838. And as we mentioned before, all 38 to 41 factors are that affect your score are negative factors. So literally no one has a perfect score. I say that, and I had to eat my words, because one day, I don't know, 5 years ago, I think we had a client who came in one bureau had a perfect score, and I'd never seen that before.
Wow.
It was an 844 or something. I'd never seen it before. But don't worry, because when you're shooting for the best mortgage rates, we're going to talk about how rate affects it. But anything over 740, you're in the elites. You're in the top one percenters, or you know, you're not the deplorables, I guess. So, some factors interact with other factors, and some factors are time related. So it's very difficult to predict exactly how fast your scores may change or improve. But from the factors and from our experience, we do it pretty well. We hit within a couple of months of our target times and target scores that we're looking to get. Sometimes we're building credit from scratch. Sometimes we're starting over. And so we're going to, in our program, cover the various scenarios of, hey, what do I do if I had a major credit disruption? And Carrie, what are the worst of the credit disruptions that can come down the pike on you?
Oh, foreclosure,
yeah.
Bankruptcy,
okay.
Things like that.
Yeah, those are the big ones. A foreclosure and a bankruptcy, those are the two biggest effects and the biggest dings you can get. But to encourage you, even recovery from a bankruptcy or recovery from a foreclosure is only about a 2 to 3 year process, depending on when it was filed, when it was discharged, and what was involved in it. So I want to say to everyone out there that there is no one within our listening audience that is so far gone credit-wise that you can't recover. And here's a little secret. Our founding fathers in our early laws of our country, one of the things they outlawed was debtor prison. That was common in Europe. If you owed money and you couldn't pay, they just threw you in jail. I don't know how you're supposed to pay them back when they threw you
right.
in jail, but
yeah.
Hey, you were in jail and that was it. So they outlawed debtors' prisons. They also did another thing. They adopted in the old Jewish tradition, there was the year, the Sabbath year, the seventh year, and in that year, all debts were canceled. And we didn't quite do that, but what we did do in our credit laws was put a 7-year statute of limitation on any negative reporting. So basically, folks, if you're out there and you've had a credit problem, it doesn't really matter what it is. 7 years from now, it's as though it never existed, or 7 years from the date of the last activity on that account. When we get back off the break, we'll talk a little bit more about credit scores, how they affect you, how you can make them work to your favor to get better rates.
thank you for joining us this morning. We're talking about the wonderful world of credit. As always, if you have questions, give us a call at 864-235-9596. You can email us at themortgagemoment@gmail.com, or you can catch any of our past shows on repeat at preferredfinancialgreenville.com.
Thanks, Carrie. And we're going to help our listeners kind of crack open the credit scoring system so that you can use it to your advantage. Your interest rate on your mortgage is going to be dependent on your credit score. And so it's a really important criteria. We've even in the last couple of years have had a change in PMI premiums, where now the PMI companies are using credit scores to rate the borrower. And you actually not only get a better rate with a better score, you get a lower PMI premium. So it's a double whammy. When we first learned about the credit score system, there were some parameters we were aware of, a lot that we weren't aware of. I mentioned before the break that there's a 7-year statute of limitations on any adverse reporting. That would be collection accounts and any derogatory reporting in your credit bureau. The start point of the statute of limitations, Carrie, is what? How do they determine at what point 7 years later they can drop off?
The date that you were last active on that account.
Okay, and last active could mean what for an account?
The last payment you made.
Okay, pretty much that. So if you had, for instance, a credit card that went into default, turned into a collection, 7 years from the day you last made a payment on that card, that collection account, that derogatory reference would totally drop off your credit report. It cannot be re-retrieved. No one knows it's ever there. So, again, the good word out there for people who might have had a credit disruption is that, ultimately, 7 years is a clean slate. Now, we don't have to wait 7 years for somebody to buy a house. We're going to talk about how we can do that in 3 years or less, even from the worst credit disruption situations. But it's good to know that the credit score system allows a person to recover from an event. I've always said that the time-weighted credit factors can work both for you and against you. When you're trying to get past a bad event, the more time past the event, the less impact it has on your scores. When you're trying to establish credit, time can work against you because there's some things that can't be done quickly. If you are starting from scratch and never have had any credit, you're probably not even going to generate a credit score for 6 months because it simply can't score you when you have no real history to score. So we'll talk about how we're going to establish credit from scratch, reestablish credit from a disruption, and let's talk about some obvious things. Carrie, of all the things that affect your credit score, the most obvious, what is the biggest effect?
Making your payments on time.
Yeah, I know. You would think that, you know, that's just logical, but that is the single biggest hit to your credit score. Now, here's what we need to distinguish. The credit system doesn't necessarily say a payment is late when the creditor does.
Right.
So sometimes you have a credit card, and it will say your payment is due on the 1st of the month. It's late after the 15th of the month, and they add a late penalty or a late charge. But when does the credit system consider somebody late?
When you hit 30 full days late.
Okay, so it's a 30-day late. Now, that doesn't mean you want to take things up to day 29.
Right.
And what we find is that, okay, even if you do online payment, sometimes they don't post until that payment clears your bank.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not something you want to take up to the edge of the cliff by any means. But do realize that just because you may have been late from the creditor standpoint and they added a late fee, you may not be late in the credit system, and that's a good thing. We're going to talk about some other factors that you may not know about. Carrie, probably the other biggest factor that we see that affects most American borrowers on their credit report, what is it?
The proportion of balance to your credit limit.
And what does that gobbledygook mean?
That means if you have a credit limit of $5,000 and you have charged it up to $4,500,
mm-hmm.
It's not going to score you as well as if you've only charged up $1,000.
That's right. So the proportion of the balance to the credit limit they give you, and we're talking here about charge cards.
Right.
Not about installment loans, because if you did installment loans that way, early in your loan, you'd have a bad score.
Right.
Okay. So for revolving credit or credit cards, how much you charge on your credit card affects your credit score. And Carrie, over the years, we found that you can charge up to what percent before you begin to be penalized?
About 40%.
Okay, that's great. So remember that, folks. If you've got a $5,000 credit limit, you don't want to charge more than $2,000 unless you have to on an emergency situation. Always keep the balance at or under about 40% of your credit limit. If you need to use more credit, ask your creditor for an increase in the credit limit. And that way your proportion of balance to credit limit will stay in line. Now, the good thing about that is if it gets out of whack, it's got an easy fix. What's the fix?
Yeah, just pay it
down. Just pay it down.
Yep.
Okay. And the effect is instant.
Right.
And that's another thing. Some of the changes that we have to make in a person's credit profile, I mentioned there are time-weighted factors, and it just takes time before your scores improve. But not with this one.
Now, we say instant, but that doesn't mean you can pay it today and your credit will be repaired tomorrow. It is instant in that the next time the credit actually, the next time your creditor reports to the bureau, it will be fixed.
Thank you. That's exactly right. The minute that the new balance hits the credit record.
Right.
And sometimes that can be a 30 to 40 day lag
between.
Unfortunately. I know, and that's frustrating. We have something we call a force change, but it's expensive.
It's very expensive, yeah.
So you always want to take action as early in your mortgage preparation as you can to get those balances paid down on your credit cards, or maybe get your credit limits increased if you need to access that much credit each month. But your proportion of balance to credit limit, probably the next biggest hit to your credit other than a late payment. Now, there's some new factors, Kerry, that they just added a few years ago, and they have to do also with how you manage revolving debt. And one of those is every credit card, when you charge X amount of dollars on it, will send you a bill and gives you a minimum payment. What if you make the minimum payment? Well, you're doing what you're supposed to do. Well, what's the effect on your scores, Kerry?
It's not going to be as good as if you were to make more than the minimum payment.
That's right. One of the new score factors that they threw at us a few years ago actually looks back and says, has the borrower been making their credit card minimum payment? Is that what they do and they're kind of treading water? Or are they making more than their minimum payment? And Kerry, we've even found that we can put scores on steroids and increase them dramatically faster by doing what with the credit card balances?
Paying them off completely each month.
Every month. Now, folks, that may sound impossible to do, but it's not. It doesn't mean you can do it today, but it does mean that if you work towards it, that really the best use of revolving credit when it comes down to it, again, apart from just an emergency need of funds, the best use of a credit card is not to buy something that you don't already have the money for. And you can use the credit card for the convenience of the online transaction or the retailer that you go to the store so you don't have to bring a bunch of cash in your wallet. Use it for the convenience, but the best thing is to pay it off in full each month. And, Kerry, when they first added this score criteria, our rebuilding process that used to take 18 to 24 months, all of a sudden we could get to the same point in 8 to 12 months if the borrower was doing this, charging their credit cards, using them, but paying the balance off each month in full. So that's huge. The other new factor that they added in revolving credit scoring was a trending balance report. Again, this looks back 12 months, it looks back 24 months and 36 months, and it says, what has the balance on this borrower's credit card generally been doing? Has it been trending up? Has it been about the same? Or have they been paying it down? So obviously, if the balance is trending up, that's going to affect you negatively. If the balance is trending down, that's a good positive trend, and your scores will improve. Now, there's some other items that may appear on your credit report that we're going to talk about how to handle, and those are collection accounts and judgments. Kerry, what's the difference between a collection and a judgment?
A judgment actually stays on your credit file and a tax lien for 10 years versus a collection, which is only 7 years.
Okay, so a judgment is a legal action
right
that a creditor has taken beyond a collection account.
Mm-hmm.
If a collection account is listed, you do owe them the money. Legally, you're obligated to pay it. Realistically, nobody's going to show up at your door and twist your arm off to make you pay it. A creditor is allowed to take any collection account they have and take that to a judge and request that the judge put a lien on anything you own that's publicly registered, like your house, your real estate, and that is called a judgment. A judgment basically means that the disposition of your property, you can't sell your property without paying that judgment off. And so a judgment is far more serious than a collection account as far as the credit system goes. Tax liens, I guess, do they even go away? I don't remember.
They do have a 10-year statute
mm-hmm. also. I thought maybe the government inserted themselves in perpetuity.
I don't think so. We had someone in the last year that had about $40,000 in tax liens that was able to just make them go away. We don't recommend that, by the way.
Unless you want to live in fear of the men in black suits coming to your house. Yeah. Pay your tax liens. But we'll talk about how to deal with collection accounts and judgments. Let's talk a minute, though, Kerry, about how the lender uses credit scores in the underwriting process. First of all, what do they use the credit score system as an initial determination?
To determine what program you qualify for and how your rate will be built.
Okay, so as far as what score you must have, each program has a different minimum score requirement.
Right.
If you're below that minimum requirement, you simply are not going to get approved. There's no way to. So let's talk a minute about what those scores are so you get an idea of the range of scores at which you can qualify. Kerry, if we're talking about conventional loans, that's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loans, what's their minimum score requirement?
620.
Okay. And who has the lowest score requirement?
That would be FHA.
Yes, it is. FHA technically will allow to a 580 score, and technically VA will too. However, in this day and time, we don't have any VA lenders who will go under 620. We do have FHA lenders, though, who will. And if we are able to get the loan through the automated underwriting process with an approval, we can technically go down to 580. Now, realistically, in our practice, I think, Kerry, the lowest score we've had an automated approval on was
about 591, I think.
Yeah, 591, 592. That's about it. Seems to be the bottom of that. When we get back, though, we'll talk a little bit more about the scoring and the underwriting process. Join us after the break. Just joining us this morning, we're talking about credit scores. We're going to talk in detail now about how we go about establishing credit if you don't have any, or improving credit scores if you've had a major credit disruption. In the underwriting process, Kerry, we talked about how a minimum score is required under each program. Of the three scores, which one do the lenders use?
They use the middle of the three.
Okay, so they do not average the three. They literally throw out the high. They throw out the low, and it is the middle score. So when we're saying, okay, conventional loans require a 620 score, what we really mean is conventional loans require a 620 middle score. And you were going to mention something before the break about...
Yeah, when we say that the minimum scores are 580, you know, you're going to see commercials and hear other radio commercials that say, you know, FHA, no minimum score. Technically, that's true. But getting approval on those is very, very difficult. And for the purposes of our program, we're really just talking about, you know, our best chances of getting an approval. So if you have an interesting situation, just give us a call and we'll work through whatever we need to work through.
Sure thing. And if you need any credit advice, I'm available 864-235-9596 anytime during the week. So pick up the phone and take advantage of that. The lender, when your loan is submitted for underwriting, will first look at your middle score to make sure that you meet the minimum score threshold requirement. There's some other items, Kerry, though, that can appear outside of a credit report that are kind of linked to credit but may not appear in the credit bureau itself can prevent a person from getting a loan, particularly government loans. Before we submit a government loan, we have to check a government list, don't we?
Right, the CAVERS list.
That's the CAVERS list. And that is, I don't even know, what does that stand for?
It's changed over the years, but it's Credit Authorization Virtual Response System,
yeah.
I think, or something
sounds
along
like
those lines.
Sounds like the Pentagon to me. All right, so you don't, on the CAVERS list, what is that? What does that show?
It checks to see if you have any government debt that would prevent you from getting a new government loan.
That's right. So folks may not be on the credit report because it may have dropped off, but for instance, if you have a tax lien, you'll be on the CAVERS list, and that tax lien has to be addressed. We're going to talk about how to do that. You don't have to pay it off, but you do have to enter into a program of repayment if you're going to use a government-insured loans. For our listeners out there, Carrie, which of the loans are government-insured loans?
FHA, USDA, and VA.
Okay, they all end in A. That's right. The FHA, VA, USDA are government-insured loans. You cannot get one if you're on their CAVERS list. Now, you also may have a judgment, and credit bureaus do report judgments. However, because these are public record and the counties are not always as good at reporting, sometimes we have people whose credit report looks clean. And then in a title search, which the attorney has to do before the borrower can close on their purchase or refinance their loan, a judgment will show up in the public record. That can be a showstopper also. As I mentioned before, if there's a judgment out there and you already own a house, you cannot refinance it, and you cannot buy a house if you have a judgment. So that has to be taken care of. It can be settled, doesn't have to be paid in full. It has to be paid in full, but doesn't have to be settled for the full amount. There's a 10-year statute of limitation on a judgment. So sometimes as you get into the 6th, 7th, 8th year of a judgment, the person on the other end of that judgment who is owed the money may say, hey, I'd rather have 40 cents on the dollar rather than wait another 3 years and have nothing when the judgment lapses. So we cannot close a loan with an outstanding judgment. With tax liens, though, Carrie, there is a way that even though the tax lien is filed and will remain on record, that we can allow a borrower to buy a home or refinance their home. What do we have to do with a tax lien?
You have to make sure that you are on a repayment plan and that you have been on it and paid consistently so far for 3 months.
That's right. So if there is a tax lien out there, the earlier the better. You got to get out there, bite the bullet, enter into a repayment agreement with the IRS if it's federal tax, with the state, if state tax. And then you have to have been in the repayment plan and made 3 payments before you can apply for a loan.
And that doesn't mean that you can start up the payment plan and just make 3 payments at one time. It actually does have to be 3 full months with payments made each time.
That's right. Now, if we have a defaulted student loan, Carrie, because the government has taken over the student loan program, we would also find that that borrower would be on the CAVERS list, correct?
Right.
And if there is a defaulted student loan, what do we have to do to get them off the CAVERS list?
They have to get those reinstated.
Okay, and a student loan reinstatement program, generally speaking, with most of the student loan lenders, is a 6-month initial program, meaning this. If we pull up a credit report, your student loan is in a defaulted status, in a collection status. You can call NailNet, whoever the student loan servicer is, and request that your loan be put under a reinstatement program. They will work out a payment with you that is affordable. You must make that payment, though, for 6 months before they will then zero the collection balance on the student loan, take it out of a defaulted status, and they will reinstate it into an open active status. So you cannot leave a student loan in default and get a government-insured loan. Cannot leave a tax lien in place and get a government-insured loan or any kind of loan. You have to either settle a judgment or you have to enter into a repayment plan. If you have a tax lien, you have to enter into a reinstatement program if you have a student loan. Some of these things, you know, can take some time to get set up also. So again, when we say you've got to make six payments, well, if you're starting today, you have to call your servicer. They're going to have you provide them with income information so they can structure you a payment. They're going to respond to you. Then you've got to accept the offer. Then you've got to start making the payment. Well, you're probably a month down the road right there. Then you've got to make six payments. We have to prove six payments. That can usually take 7 months because the last of your payments has to clear before we can then say, okay, it's time to apply for a loan. So we really urge very early action. If you're contemplating buying a home or refinancing your home, within the next year, really the best thing you can do is pick up the phone and call us and let us pull a credit report. Let's get a status quo right now. Is there anything we need to address and take care of? If there's nothing to address and take care of, well then, hey, we've got a clear coast ahead because what we're going to do is show you how to enhance your scores so you get the best rate when you get going. So early intervention is the key. Early start is the key. Don't wait till the last minute. Don't find your dream home and then say, hey, I think I'll go find out if I can get a loan on it. The thing to do is before you ever find that dream home, call us. Let us do a credit pull. Let us start you down the path of home ownership, not only just to barely get you by, but to get you the best rate that can be.
And as a reminder, we don't charge you a thing until a loan eventually closes. So.
That's right. If you choose us to do your loan, we get paid. If you don't, we don't. But we do that as a public service, so feel free to reach out to us. We're happy to help you with this. Let's talk about, Carrie, this particular for our young listeners, which we hope there are many of them out there. You're just out of college. You never had any credit. We pull up a credit bureau, and it says, cannot score a borrower due to lack of credit activity.
Right.
That's just, you know, you got to have a starting point. So what we have found in all of the years of doing this is it's critical the manner in which you begin to establish your credit. This is going to sound really strange to you, but you have to use credit to get scored. But then the type of credit that you get is the type of credit that gets most people in trouble. So sometimes people think, well, why are you making me do these things? I can live on a cash basis. Don't they know that I'm responsible?
Right.
But the truth is, if you're not using the credit system, if you're not accessing credit, it simply can't score you. If you don't have scores, you can't get a house. So we will show you how to use credit, but we're going to show you how to do it in a way that you don't go into debt. That's the key. First thing we're going to do is we're going to get two credit cards. What do you mean two, Mark? Why do you need two? Well, because one is going to build your score slowly and five won't help a bit. So we found that two is a good way to start. Now, Carrie, if someone had no credit score, they went down to their bank and said, can I get a credit card? What's the bank probably going to say?
Well, you have to have credit to get credit.
That's right. It's kind of like getting your first job. Well, come see me when you've had your first job. Well, I know, but I'm trying to get my first job. So the same thing with credit. However, there is a special kind of credit card that you will not be turned down for because the creditor protects themselves with your money. It's called a secured credit card. If you go to Google, you type in secured credit card, you'll see 1,000 of them come up. And a secured card is where you send to the creditor a deposit. We recommend $300. They establish a $300 credit limit for you. Now, this is not a debit card. It doesn't mean when you charge something, they take the money out of the $300 you gave them. That's their safety deposit. They're not going to let you charge more than $300. You use it just like a credit card. But if you don't make your payment, they've got your money. They'll shut your card down. They'll pay themselves off and send you what's left over. That's not the way we want it to happen, but it is the way to get your credit established. So when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about how to start from scratch and develop a credit score. We're down the home stretch talking about credit scores, how to build from scratch, how to recover from credit incidents, how to maximize your credit score so you get the best rate and the best PMI premiums when you go to buy a house or refinance your home. We've been talking about, for our young listeners or anyone who kind of exited the credit system at any time and hasn't been active, how to start from scratch and build your score as the fastest. We mentioned before the break, the first thing we have you do is establish two credit cards. And although you'll be turned down if you go to a regular bank for the credit cards, if you go online or go to your bank and ask them for a secured credit card, you will not be turned down. The secured credit card, you make a deposit with the creditor. $300 is what we recommend. That's your credit limit. They're not going to let you borrow more than that. You use the card like a credit card, and you pay your bill each month. And if you fail to pay your bill, they shut you down, pay themselves off with your deposit, send you the money back, but then your credit scores crash and you haven't accomplished anything. You've gone backwards. So just we mentioned secured credit cards because they are the way to start if you're having to start or start over. Now, we also want to add into that mix an installment loan. And, Carrie, for our listeners, what is an installment loan?
An installment loan is where they give you an amount and you pay back exactly the same amount each month.
That's right. It's a what we call a fixed monthly payment. Credit card, you can make all kinds of different payments. And how you make those payments will affect your scores. But installment loan, you just make the monthly payment. Now, you might say, well, Mark, you told me you weren't going to get me into debt, but here you are getting me into debt. So here's the trick. Number one, you do not go to a finance company. What happens, Carrie, if you go to a finance company and borrow money on an installment loan?
They end up rolling it over and opening a new account on your credit every other month or so.
What will happen to your scores if you use a finance company for financing?
They will not increase.
They will, in fact, go down. There is a negative score that says use of finance company financing is because of their practice of if you are late with a payment, they will ask you, do you want to just add that payment to the end of your loan? And they will do what's called rolling the note. And then the lender and the score system doesn't know if you really paid that kind of loan on time or if you just rolled it. So you avoid the finance companies, but you go down to your bank and you say, look, I need to borrow $1,800. And we recommend $1,800. It has to be over $1,600, but $1,800 is good. You tell the bank, look, I don't need this money for anything. So what I want you to do is I want you to open up a checking account for me. I want you to deposit the $1,800 from my loan in my checking account. And then I want you to draft my monthly payment out of that checking account. And you know what? You're using the loan money to pay the loan back. You're not going to go out and spend it somewhere and blow it out, but you're going to establish it. This doesn't get you into debt because you're using the debt to pay back the debt. And you don't have to worry about being late on the payment because you put it on a direct draft. Now, our experience with starting from scratch with two credit cards and an installment loan is you will first generate a score after about 6 months or so. That score may even be high enough to start and do an FHA loan. I have seen that happen.
Mm-hmm.
I can assure you beyond a doubt that after a year, you will have scores over 640. You will be eligible for all programs, and you will be able to get any type of loan at that point that you want to use in the system. Other than, and Carrie, is USDA, they still require three trade lines with a 12-month history or with a 24-month history?
I think it's just 12, but they also allow alternate trade lines. So.
Okay, so you'll be eligible for all types of loans. Now, remember, when you're getting these credit cards, here's how you're going to use them. Carrie, what are our rules for using all credit cards?
Charge something small.
And by small, we don't want to exceed what percent of the credit limit?
40%.
That's right. So if you've got your $300 credit limit, never charge more than $120. But we really say just charge $20 or $30.
Yeah.
A tank of gas.
Exactly.
Something you've got the money for. Then what do?
Pay it off in full
every month. Steroids. Believe me, two people side by side start at the same point. One of them makes a minimum payment. One of them pays the balance off in full every month. When we get down a year, that one who is making the minimum payment will barely have a 620. The one that has made the payment in full every month, they'll be at 660 to 680. It's an amazing difference. Puts you on steroids. So that's how you get your credit established. We are happy to help you do those things. We're happy to track your scores as they build. So again, if you need any assistance, call us. And we want to talk about those of you who might have experienced a major credit disruption. How do you go about starting over? There are multiple factors and multiple things you may need to do. We can only address the major things that you have to do, But each case in starting over is very individualized. This is truly an instance where you do not need to chart these waters by yourself. You need to call us. We need to pull a baseline credit report. And with the factors that they give us, we will design a specific credit recovery program. But let's talk about, in general, the things we need to do. And, Carrie, let's go back again. What are the major credit disruptions that we may be talking about here?
Foreclosure and bankruptcy.
Okay. Foreclosure or bankruptcy, whether it's Chapter 7 or 13, all lenders will institute a wait. And it doesn't matter how good the scores are, you still have to wait a certain length of time. For conventional loans with a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, Carrie, what is the rule for a conventional loan?
It's 4 years for a wait. But
and
still
even
have
after
to put
4 years,
20% down.
20% down. How long before you can put less than 20% down on a conventional loan?
7 years.
Wow. So that's the big tanker. FHA, on the other hand, let's talk about it. If you had a Chapter 7, when are you eligible for an FHA loan?
3 years.
Okay. And how much do you have to put down after 3 years?
Just the normal 3.5%.
The normal 3.5%. So FHA is our go-to first available option when you've had a major credit disruption like a bankruptcy or a foreclosure. The waiting periods are much shorter for FHA. Now, the shortest waiting period and the most forgiving loan program is rightfully which one, Carrie?
VA.
VA. There's a recognition that our veterans deserve a little more slack when it comes to letting them recover. And so VA allows for a veteran who has eligibility to use the VA program to use that VA program only 2 years out of a Chapter 7 bankruptcy or a foreclosure. Now, Carrie, again, this is always confusing to the consumer. They ask me this all the time. They filed their bankruptcy in, let's say, October, but it didn't discharge for 6 months. In other words, it took that long for the bankruptcy court to hear the bankruptcy petition, to settle all the creditors, and then to discharge the bankruptcy. When does our waiting period begin? At the filing date or the discharge date?
The discharge date.
Okay, and that can be kind of tough news, but again, these are the underwriting guidelines. When it comes to a foreclosure, Carrie, what is the event that triggers the waiting time there?
The actual deed transfer.
Okay. It is the date from which you have to wait is the date from when your deed got transferred back to the bank when they foreclosed. Now, we had some real issues with this when the Bank of America robo-signing lawsuits hit in many states. We weren't hit in South Carolina, but Florida was just heavily hit by that. And basically, Bank of America was practicing what the regulators considered an illegal practice called robo-signing. And until they sorted out how that was going to be managed in the legal system, Bank of America was suspended from executing foreclosure actions. They could file them, but they could not execute the deed transfer. And this kind of threw a monkey wrench in the waiting period. We were able for a while to get some exceptions, but we had one come up the other day that I asked for the exception from a number of lenders. Same thing. This was not Bank of America, but it was a similar situation with another lender who had basically filed a foreclosure action in 2011. So they were 7 years past that filing date, but the lender never foreclosed. They just never completed the deed transfer. And so I thought, well, surely we're 7 years past that. They'll let us buy, but they didn't.
Right.
And so foreclosure is dated from the date of the deed transfer, not from when the foreclosure action was signed. Carrie, if we have a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, that's a little bit different. A Chapter 13 is where you don't walk away from your debts, but you agree to repay them. If you're in a Chapter 13, when can you apply for a mortgage loan with some of our programs?
Conventional is 2 years from the discharge date or 4 from the dismissal date.
And a dismissal is you didn't finish your Chapter 13.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's not a good thing. You have to wait 4 years. But if you have a discharge, Chapter 13, you finished it, 2 years after that, you can get a conventional loan. But the government loans are also much shorter times. When can you apply to purchase a home in regard to how your Chapter 13 is being handled?
After 1 year, as long as you've made all of your payments on time and you have the court's permission.
Okay, and let me say that that 1 year means that you can technically purchase a home while you are in a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. You just have to be 1 year into the bankruptcy, having made 12 bankruptcy payments to the court, and with the court's permission, you can buy a home if your scores are okay. And we can improve scores even if you're in a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. Now, if you're starting over from one of these major credit disruptions, you're going to do almost the identical thing that we told our young borrowers to do when they're trying to establish their credit. The first thing we're going to do is get two credit cards. As we mentioned, if you went down to the bank, they're going to look at your Chapter 7 bankruptcy or your foreclosure, and they're say, I'm not going to give you a credit card. So where are we going to go, Carrie?
We're going to get a secured credit card.
And how do you find secured credit cards?
Well, you can just do an internet search.
Just do Google. Google secured credit cards. We recommend a $300 deposit. You do not use those and carry balances. You use them once a month for a small purchase. You pay that off in full every month. After we get a little bit of history on that, we go down and get an installment loan at your bank. Same way our young folks did. You borrow the money, you put it in your checking account, you draft the payment right out of the checking account so that you don't even have to worry about the payment being late. You use the debt to pay the debt back so you don't go into debt that way. Both of these things will help you reestablish your credit. If you're working on establishing or reestablishing, give us a call. 235-9596. We'll help you get started. Thanks for joining us this morning. We'll see you next week.